whether or not they knew where they were heading. In the distance, shouts rang out. The sounds of running feet came and went, and the darkened corridor behind them promised attack at each moment. But it never came. Eventually, they emerged from a long service tunnel, into a cellar, and up into the main stables. Ara felled the trio of stable hands who showed some inclination towards barring their way, using her fists and feet rather than her sword. But it still looked a brutal business. Ara's uncle left her to it, and went to the main entrance, Glass following. Some yards back from doors as wide as those of any barn, a huge carriage stood beneath protective sheets. Shirzal's, no doubt. The wheels were nearly as tall as Glass.
12 hells!
Carvin turned from the narrow gap between the stable doors.
The main gates are shut. There's a line of soldiers in front of them. 2 dozen archers on the walls above those.
He walked back towards Glass and the Inquisitors.
There must be another way.
Ara left Darla in Melkir's care, resting against a hay bale, and came to join Lord Jotsis in front of Glass.
It won't take long before they're coming up behind us.
There's no other way, not for us.
Carvin shook his head.
They say there's ways into the mountain from the basements, but I don't know how to get there or how to get through the caves if we found them.
So we go out there.
Ara drew herself straight, trying to look fierce, but her exhaustion showed.
Regal and I could make it onto the walls, attack along both sides. Clear the archers.
Glass didn't bother to point out that it would be suicide. Reinforcements would arrive before they got to the gates. And even if they got above the gates, opening them would be no simple thing. And merely leaving the palace wouldn't save them. The weight of this knowledge pressed down upon her shoulders. Her arrival had killed these people. Whole families condemned to die.
I'm game. Regal flashed Ara a wolf smile. I came for a free meal. I get enough of fighting to the death back in Verity. But I'm damned if I'm supporting that woman against the Emperor, or inviting the Skithroll over the mountains.
Seldom spoke up behind Glass.
We're done for.
We are.
Ajika joined them.
We should pray.
Glass smiled. She turned back towards the Inquisitors and nodded. She had never been a zealot in the mold of Sister Wheel, but she believed that at the end of things the Ancestor would gather them to the whole, and all division would be set aside. It was an end worth praying for. She reached out for Ajika's hand, then Seldom's.
Sister, brother, it has been an honor to serve with you.
Lord Glossus, last to arrive, clambered up the stairs from the cellar, helped by a young nephew.
They're on our trail.
She paused to catch her breath.
I could hear them in the corridor right behind us.
Another wheezing chestful of air hauled in under her ribs.
They're coming!
Ara and Regal moved quickly to flank the stairs, both with blood-stained swords in hand. The sounds of a fight would draw guards and soldiers from other directions. It would be over quickly. The sounds of footsteps on stone stairs grew louder, closer. A dark head popped up. Regal swung. Ara swung. Swords clashed, Ara's blade turning Regal's aside as the head jerked back.
Clara!
Ara shouted.
What in hell are you? Don't kill me!
Clara came up again, hands raised. Regal stepped back, frowning. Ara gave a cry and pushed past Clara, heading down the steps. She emerged a moment later, in a staggering, limping, moving embrace with Nona Grey and Sister Kettle, all three of them clutching swords.
I've seldom had a prayer answered so swiftly.
Glass released the Inquisitor's hands and hurried across to Nona and Kettle. Glass wrapped her arms around Kettle's altogether too skinny frame, then Nona's, similarly lacking in softness, all hard angles.
Sister Kettle, so good to see you. Mistress Shade asked me to bring you back to the convent in one piece, and I would hate to disappoint that woman.
Glass found her smile so wide it hurt.
She took Nona's hands. A novice. I've reconsidered your punishment. I've decided death was too harsh. Banishment seems too extreme, too. So, no visits to town for a month, and you're to attend the optional spirit classes on 7 days instead. Glass stepped back and found both of them teary-eyed. To her dismay, she discovered her own eyes misting.
Enough of this. The gate is heavily guarded. How are you going to get us out?
She noticed that Nona was limping, Kettle too, and the young nun also sported a livid black and scarlet wound across her throat. Nona's gaze wandered over the various stalls with horses in. The rope and tack hung across the walls, the hay heaped beside sacks of grain. Her eyes came to rest on Shirzal's huge carriage. One of the sis had pulled back the sheeting from the door. It gleamed darkly, lacquered in black, emblazoned with Shirzal's coat of arms, a storm cloud above a mountain, both lit by the jagged golden lightning that joined them.
"Is it a clear path to the outer gates?" Nona asked.
"Apart from all the archers," Regal said. "And the soldiers."
Nona looked across at the cage fighter, registering him for the first time. She stood frozen for a heartbeat, then looked away, almost shy.
"Everyone needs to get into the carriage."
"How will that help?"
Lord Jotsis pushed through the survivors starting to gather around the newcomers.
"I will move it."
Nona turned her holy black eyes on the man. "There are palace guards entering the cellar below as we speak. Get in the carriage, and you might survive."
"Uncle!"
Ara was already pulling the lord towards the carriage. Glass watched without comment. Nona's unassuming air of command was remarkable. The girl had Sis lords hurrying to do her bidding. Kettle turned around and scattered caltrops down the stairs.
"Better hurry, Abbas. They're coming."
Glass nodded and followed Carvan Jotsis. A sense of urgency took hold and the guests in their soiled finery started to hurry towards the carriage. It looked large enough to hold them all, though there would be no room for modesty. It would take 8 horses to pull, and horses wouldn't see them through locked gates. What one girl could do, Abbas couldn't imagine. But she had prayed, and Nona had come. Now she would have faith. Nona reached out, took a lantern from one of the passing guests, and smashed it at the base of the piled hay. She pointed to a pitchfork.
"Block the stairs."
Regal moved to begin the task while the others stood horrified.
"You'll burn us alive!"
"She's mad. Look at her!"
The air was already hot on Glass's face, and her eyes stung. The memory of her burned hand returned to her, not the unreal agony of the burning, but the long, dark misery of pain in the weeks that followed. She hoped Nona's plan reached beyond torching the palace. Nona ignored the cries of protest.
"Make sure the horses can get out, Terra."
"But..."
Terra held up her broken wrist.
"Just do it."
Nona limped toward Shazal's carriage. Kettle limped after her. Clara chased both of them.
"Burned to death in the carriage? Is that the plan?"
She stopped in her tracks.
"I liked Shazal's better."
Behind her, the panicked whinnying of horses had begun.
"I am rather wondering what the plan is myself," Kettle said.
Behind her, the flames were leaping up across the hay, smoke billowing from the stairs to the cellar. Regal stumbled out of it, coughing, wiping his eyes.
"I'm going to walk the path," Nona said. "Unlock the doors."
She waved towards the stable's main entrance. The 2 inquisitors ran over, hauling the locking bar clear.
"You won't be able to," Kettle said. "Not so soon. You walked an hour ago."
Glass had no practical experience, but she had heard Sister Pan's stories. On rare occasions, the old woman, her tongue loosened perhaps by convent wine, spoke of past days and of the deeds of the greatest holy witches. Walking the path was always dangerous, a step too far. Take too much power to yourself
and it would rip you apart. It took time to recover from. When extremity drove a holy witch to return to the path too soon, it always ended in disaster, often for everyone around. The old saying was, seven moons to be sure. Some of the greatest had walked again after a single moon, a single night to recover their focus. And for some of those, it had been their last moon, too. The curtain wall of Heod's Fist, a great castle close to Ferriton where glass had grown up, held a scar yards across and feet deep, and in its midst, the shape of a person etched into the blackened rock. Sister Pan's teacher, Sister Nail, had died there in defense of the castle against the army of the rebel king. A second walk attempted at the sunset of a day when she had walked the path at sunrise. Ara hurried back from the carriage to help Melkir lift Darla from her resting place among the hay bales.
"You can't walk again, Nona."
Ara struggled with Darla's weight.
"You know you can't."
Nona opened her mouth to reply, then froze. Glass realized that until this moment, Nona hadn't seen the Geraint novice, lying down among the hay bales.
"Darla!"
Nona dropped her sword.
"What have they done to you?"
She was beside the girl in a moment, kneeling over her, oblivious to the crackle of the fire rising towards a roar.
"What have they done to you?"
Her hands moved across Darla's wounds, inches above them, trembling. Darla lay, white-faced, lips blue-tinged.
"What kept you run?"
Darla managed a smile, then grimaced and coughed. Dark blood ran over her lips, dribbled down her chin. Nona swung around to stare up at the people standing around her. Glass, Melkir, Ara, Kettle. She fixed on the nun.
"You can help her!"
"Nona."
Kettle looked down, head shaking.
"You can! You've got supplies! You've got..."
Nona bit off whatever she had been going to say, suddenly stricken by some realization.
"It's too late."
With immense effort, Darla closed a big hand around Nona's.
"Tired?"
Her brown eyes clouded with confusion, a kind of wonder, staring at some distant place above Nona's head. A moment passed. Another. Darla's gaze remained fixed.
"She's gone, Nona."
Kettle put her hand on the girl's shoulder. Nona flinched it off as if it burned. Sister Ajiga bowed her head.
"The ancestor has taken her to..."
"Damn the ancestor!"
Nona gripped Darla's fingers.
"Get up, Darla! Get up! I'm taking us out of here! We're going back to the convent! We're going..."
Ara took Nona under both arms, drawing her up, choking back tears.
"She's gone, Nona."
Smoke rolled over them both. Glass retreated from the heat and smoke, coughing, making for the carriage. A panicked horse ran past her, nearly sending her to the floor. She reached the steps and helped Lord Glossus into the carriage ahead of her, Ajika coming up behind. The survivors were packed along two broad bench seats, crowding the stuffed leather, and crammed upright in the space between. Nona, Ara, and Kettle came from the fire. It swirled around the three of them like a cloak of shadows and flame. Nona, pale in her rags, her black eyes unreadable, looked as though the blaze had birthed her. She looked like something not of the world.
"You can't. It's madness."
Ara lacked conviction now. But what choices were there? Chapter 46.
"The Shipheart is here. I've stood before it. I am restored."
Nona took Ara's hands from hers. She needed Ara safe.
"Get into the carriage." "There's no room."
Then get on to it and watch for arrows.
Nona closed her eyes, closed her ears to the roar of the fire, and opened her heart to the banked fury that had trembled in every limb since she left Darla, still warm, among the hay. The path had seldom seemed so distant, just a thread, little more than the crack that had run through her dreams back in the day when Giljon first put her into his wooden cage. She saw it as a wisp, there and not there. Her feet remembered the blade path, its narrow treachery, the fall yawning beneath. Darla had hated that thing. She never managed more than 4 steps, but she returned to it time and again, no fear in her. Nona had asked her why once. Darla had given that fierce grin of hers.
"My father told me your weaknesses have more to teach you than your strengths."
General Rathon wouldn't know his daughter was dead. Not yet. He wouldn't know that Nona had used the last of the fleshbind that might have saved her. He wouldn't know that it had been spent on hollow revenge against a man not fit even to look at his daughter. 7 moons to be safe. Nona hadn't any interest in being safe. If the path tore her apart, she would welcome it, and hope only that no stone of Shazal's palace was left atop another. She would turn her helpless rage to a fire that would purge the mountain, a fire that would consume the pallid flames behind her, scouring the tunnels of the Tetragode. She looked again for the path and found it blazing, a river, twisting through more dimensions than a mind should know, running at right angles to imagination. The shipheart's pulse beat in her ears. Without hesitation, Nona threw herself forward. This time, it was different. The path wasn't something narrow, veering through sudden angles, trying to throw her at every step. The path had become a plain, a flowing expanse of molten silver so wide that falling from it seemed an impossibility. Even if she weren't running, the path would draw her on. She could race forever, untiring, each step bringing new energy. The world lay behind her. Time had no hold. The path enfolded, filled, led, gave direction. The hard part wasn't staying the course. It was turning from it. Too many steps taken, and leaving would cease to be an option. At least leaving and remaining whole. That was true of many paths, perhaps. Nona saw Clara's dilemma now. How hard it must have been for her to do what had seemed so simple from Nona's side. How easy it would be to return to her course. Nona ran the path, and all her hurts were left behind her in the very first step. Her wounds, her exhaustion, even the ache of Darla's death, something small behind her, growing pale and faint. Each step flooded her with an energy so fierce, so exhilarating, that it overwrote her, became her, replaced her center. In the end, only Darla brought her back. Nona would have run the path forever. Something so right couldn't be denied. But for the fact of her friend's death diminishing behind her, something like that couldn't simply be thrown away, discarded, abandoned, as if it held no worth or meaning. And with a howl, Nona turned in a place where there could be no turning, and fell back into the world. She hit the ground and only with effort managed to stop falling. The world held too many possibilities and her body wanted to explore them. Wanted to flow like the smoke, dance like the flames licking around her, follow gravity's pull deep into the ground. Wanted to run as she had run on the path, not in one direction, but in all of them at once. Aspects of Nona began to separate, some to answer the horse's distress, some to explore the smoke, others to play with fire. A faint noise penetrated the vastness of Nona's wonder, and she turned towards it, towards the black carriage wrapped in smoke. A figure clung to its side. Ara. Nona drew a breath as if breaking the surface of some bottomless lake. It hurt,
as if her lungs were wrapped in broken glass, but she had been schooled in pain of late. Nona drew the breath and drew back into herself the possibilities, the myriad choices, until at last she was focused, one whole, shuddering with power. She approached the carriage, suddenly aware of the fragility of everything around her, even the flagstones beneath her feet. In the past, she had thrust the path's power from her rather than keep it. She had thrown it as heat when she brought fire to the forest outside Verity, and as lightning against the Nói Gúin. Now, though, she turned it inward, running it through muscle and bone, owning it as strength, not just the kind that moves mountains, but the kind that preserves the flesh doing the moving. Sister Pan had explained that one at length. The strength to punch through walls is of little use if the arm you punch with shatters before the rock does. Nona moved behind the carriage. She inched her hands forward with caution. Too much pressure too swiftly, and her palms would break through the timber before her, and she would be elbow deep in splintered wood. Hands met lacquered paneling, pressure mounted, and Nona's bare feet began to slide across the flagstones.
No!
Armored in the path's energies, Nona kicked at the stones beneath her feet, pulverizing the rock, excavating small craters to push against. The boards beneath her palms creaked, and the huge carriage stole into motion. Nona kept up the pressure, feet scraping the flagstones, shattering several more. The front of the carriage hit the stable doors at a brisk walking pace, and they shuddered aside, billowing smoke out into the courtyard. Shirzal's carriage emerged, wheels clattering, thick white smoke all around, terrified horses streaming past on both sides. The archers lining the walls hesitated, uncertain what they were dealing with. Shirzal's carriage carried on past those of the Sis, lining the walls to either side. With every yard, Nona imparted more speed to it. The palace gates, more accurately described as fortress gates, would, of course, bring its progress to an abrupt and devastating halt. The first arrows began to hammer into the carriage. Those inside had already made efforts to reinforce the shutters with seating. On the outside, Ara was a popular target. But even with only one hand free, she managed to deflect those arrows that would otherwise have hit her. With the carriage moving at a good speed, Nona let it run and sprinted to get ahead of it. Every archer on her side of the courtyard took the opportunity to let fly at a clear target, and their arrows hissed around her, breaking on the flagstones, hammering into the carriage's sides, or finding her flesh. The same energies that allowed Nona's body to contain and use the path's strength also resisted arrowheads. The arrows ricocheted from her as if she were a statue, leaving just pinpricks. Feeling the path energies begin to ebb and fade, and with Shirzal's carriage rumbling along behind her, Nona threw herself at the palace gates. Her final leap took her 6 feet off the ground, and her shoulder hit the heavy timbers with a bone-jarring impact. The doors stopped her dead, and she slid into a heap at their base. Arrows hammered into the timber on both sides, several hitting her in the back. "Too light," Nona muttered. Didn't matter how strong you were, nobody could knock a man down by throwing a feather at him. She stood, the carriage only 20 yards behind her now. The gates' huge locking bar had not been lowered, but they were still held by a series of bolts driven into the stonework above and below by some system of cables anchored across the inner surface. Nona lacked both the time and the reach to rip it all clear. How to open the gates when her own strength would just throw her aside? Even if she had the time to dig footholds, Nona thought that they would probably give way before the bolts surrendered. Academia lessons came to Nona's aid where her blade and path education kept silent. Inertia keeps the lightest of things stationary in the face of great forces. You just have to act fast enough. Nona punched the left gate a foot from the edge where it met the right one. The speed of the action allowed no time for her to be pushed back. Instead, her fist burst through the timbers, and she stood with her arm elbow deep in a splintered hole,
her fist just emerging into the wind that scoured the outer surface. Nona slammed herself forward until her shoulder met the timbers and her elbow cleared the far side of the door. She bent her arm and clung on. More arrows studded the woodwork around her. More hit her back and fell away, leaving just shallow wounds. Now, anchored by the thickness of the gates themselves, Nona set her other hand, palm out to the other gate, and pushed. When she punched, the door had no time to move, and so she punched through. Now she pushed, with slow, inexorable force. Anchored to the left-hand gate, she couldn't move back. Instead, the gate had to take all the pressure. She curled around, setting her shoulder and hip to the other gate, using all the core strength of her body, magnified 1,000 times by the fading energies taken from the path. Behind her, the rumbling clatter of the carriage grew ever closer. With squeals of protest, the bolts above and below began to fail, pieces of stone shooting away, shards of wood as long as an arm breaking free as the housings gave way. A shadow loomed. Time had run out. Sherzal's carriage smashed into the gates. Nona caught between its hammer blow and the gate's anvil. A moment of darkness, of light, of whirling motion, screams and broken wood. Nona found herself on the ground with something huge rushing above her. Chapter 47. The road down from the side valley that housed Sherzal's palace was a long, curving sweep of modest gradient. It ended at the highway that threaded the Grand Pass. Despite the arrow transfixing her left calf, Ara had managed to scramble on top of the carriage, climb to the heavily damaged front, and find the braking levers. The slope was too steep for the brakes to fully arrest the carriage's motion, but they helped to tame it. Steering proved to be a different matter. The carriage steered itself by scraping along the rocky wall where engineers had cut into the valley's side to make the road. It was a process that removed a new section of the carriage's side every 20 yards or so and threatened, at every collision with a larger outcropping, to send them all veering across the narrowness of the road to pitch over the drop into whatever heart-stopping fall the darkness hid. Eventually, with about 2/3 of the mile-long journey to the pass road complete, the ruins of Sherzal's grand carriage lurched sideways and came to a halt, with the front right wheel hanging over an unknown drop. Ara stood panting, braced against the brake lever. A minute's work saw most of the carriage's passengers disembarked or carried off. 2 older men had been killed by arrows that found their way past shutters and seat bases. A matronly woman in a voluminous dress had been shot through the shoulder, the arrow still in place, its steel head emerging from her back. Regal, Kettle, and Ara kept close around the abyss. Nona crawled from beneath the wreckage of the carriage, her arms aching, legs scraped and torn. She had lunged for the axle and let it drag her with only the fading power of the path to shield her from harm.
Nona!
Ara hobbled across to help her up. Behind Ara, Nona could see the distant flames licking up above Sherzal's walls. She hoped the conflagration would spread and gut the place from lowest cellar to tallest tower.
Where's Clara?
Nona asked, looking over the survivors.
She never got in, Ara said. I called to her.
Kettle pressed her mouth into a speculative pucker.
She backed away into the smoke.
But it made no sense. The abbess would have taken her back. Nona knew it.
She made a choice, Nona.
Abbess Glass spoke in a low voice.
She helped you when you needed help. But she fancied her chances better with the Emperor's sister.
Nona looked around her. Starlight washed the roadway through a wind-torn hole in the clouds. It lit the ruined carriage, one side torn away, the roof sagging, and shone red across a score of Sis in ball gowns and formal wear, ill-suited for walking the mountains. Many bore injuries, including Kettle, Ara, and herself. Her gaze settled on Regal, the only fighter among them fit for combat, save for Melkier.
"My lady,"
he executed a half-bow, showing her that same old smile, even now. She found herself suddenly aware of how tattered and inadequate her smock was, the wind playing it around her, and how filthy everything beneath it lay. Regal. She had meant to tell him she was a novice, rather than a lady, but she wasn't sure she was either right at that moment, and with his gaze upon her she was no longer sure which she would rather be.
"Every time I dine somewhere that you are also a guest, Nona, I find myself attacked."
He rubbed his jaw as if remembering a punch.
"By the same woman."
"Saphira," Kettle stepped forward.
"Is she?"
"I punched her pretty hard," Regal said.
"But she'll get up again. I can't claim it as a fair fight, though."
"Are we safe?"
Terramensis broke into their circle, cradling her injured wrist. She seemed to have picked up new injuries in the carriage and sported a livid bruise across most of the left side of her face.
"I rather doubt it," Abbas Glass replied. "Shazal will send her soldiers after us. How soon depends on how bad a fire we left her with. But I can't see us outrunning them."
As if to answer her, the sky cleared further, and beneath the starlight the whole curve of the road could be seen, leading back to the broken gates of the palace. A troop of perhaps 50 soldiers was advancing along it at speed. They'd covered half the distance already. Nona set her back to the rocks beside the road, as spent as she had ever been. Yisht had called friends a weakness. The pain that Hesse's death, and now Darla's, had caused her, was very different from that of the harm, but it was deeper and longer-lasting. A weakness, though? It had been friendship that had Kettle follow her half the length of the Empire. Friendship that had Clara spirit her out of the dungeons of the Noi Guin. And if she had to die, she would rather do it here, under the scarlet heavens, with her sisters of the red and the grey, free and fighting, than any alternative she could imagine. Kettle stood, throwing aside the halves of the arrow she had taken from Ara's calf, and came to stand beside Nona. Ara followed, testing her weight on her tightly bound leg with a grimace.
"Ouch!"
She leaned back beside Nona, the wind spreading golden hair across the rocks.
"Nice dress," Nona said.
"Thanks. Tara helped me choose it. It was stupidly expensive."
Regal came to stand before them. His dark hair swept by the corridor wind, he glanced across at the approaching troops. All around them, the rocks lay red with starlight. He turned his gaze upon Nona, and suddenly, it felt as if the focus moon were blazing, making her sweat.
"Will you hold the road with me, sister?"
he asked.
"I've wanted to see you fight again."
"I'm not a sister, just a novice."
The moment the words left her, she felt stupid. Was that the best she could think of to say? And why did it even matter with 50 swords approaching? Regal grinned. He always grinned.
"You're my sister of the cage."
A chill ran the length of Nona's spine despite the heat of his regard. How did he know she would be Sister Cage? A secret shared only with Ara and Mistress Path.
"We were both born from Giljon's cage, after all."
He laughed, breaking any tension, and turned towards the palace, swinging his sword in a figure of eight. Abbas Glass stood revealed as Regal moved aside. She too was smiling, albeit a smile tinged with sadness.
"You three have done astonishing things to bring us so close to an impossible success. Astonishing."
She reached out her hands, and Nona took them, Kettle
and Ara laying theirs over hers. But the world is not changed by individual acts of violence, no matter how good the cause. Neither can it truly be changed by the power of the path. The greatest of the Mystic Sisters all knew this. However much strength is concentrated in a single martial sister, however far the reach of a sister of discretion, it is overreached by the strength and reach of the masses. You may be rocks, but humanity is the tide, and you only have to stand upon the sand to see how that contest concludes. In the end, it is not whether we live or die here, but how the message echoes through the Empire and beyond. We are not leaders, merely servants. Even the Emperor's power is illusion. Ultimately, the will of the people drives us, as inevitably as the advance of the ice. And the people are, each and every one of them, the children of the Ancestor. Holy. Chosen. We have shown them Shirzal's true heart, and they will judge her actions. Those who cannot slow the pursuit must flee. They must scatter across the slopes, and we must trust that some will find their way to safety and speak of what happened here. Abbess Glass stepped closer, staring into each of their faces in turn, her eyes kind. I've always prided myself on being able to look ahead, on being able to see the consequences of actions. It's a meager skill, perhaps, compared to the talents that the Ancestor has placed in you girls. But it has served me well until this night. But you should know, the greatest joy to those who see the future is that life remains full of surprises, and you have all surprised me.
Holy Mother!
Kettle's voice grew too thick with emotion to continue. I had a son, once. The abbess smiled, remembering. I couldn't have loved him more. But I never had a daughter. I would have been proud to call any of you my own. She lifted her hands, forestalling any embrace. You are my children. Children of the Ancestor. Daughters of the Rock of Faith. Daughters of Sweet Mercy. I expect you to meet your enemy with ferocity and make a good account of yourselves. Nona turned towards the road where Regal stood ready. Behind him, a thin line of the Sis with Lord Carvan Jotsis at the center. Shirzal's soldiers were close. Close enough for her to hear the tramp of their boots as they jogged forward, eight abreast. Each man was chain-armored, each bearing shield and spear. The stars still watched, their light gleaming on steel. Beside the carriage, Ajika and Seldom led the elderly and infirm in prayer. Terramensa stood, having cut away the singed length of her skirts. Clutching the knife awkwardly in her left hand, she went to stand beside her father, tears in her eyes, ready to follow the others who were already making for the main road. Soon the story of Shirzal's treason would be spreading along the Grand Pass in both directions.
Something's coming, Nona said, as Kettle led the way to stand by Regal.
Well, yes, Ara said, hefting her sword.
No, something else.
Nona glanced out into the night, down across the slopes, dark and beyond her seeing, edged with the faint crimson starlight. On high, the wind tore the clouds still further, and the hope blazed forth, adding its light to the world. Nona strained her senses. She heard footsteps? A beat, at least. Something that had been growing for a while but that hadn't registered above all the loud emotion. Suddenly, it came to her.
It's a sh—
The cracking of rock drowned her out. With no warning, a great wedge of the mountainside slid down across the road ahead. In just seconds, it was over, save for a few dozen loose boulders that continued to roll away down the slopes, crashing and bouncing into the distance. Nona watched in confusion as cascades of loose stones died to trickles. An untold weight of bedrock had slumped a score of yards, obliterating the road and the soldiers upon it. Everyone from the carriage just stood and stared, unsure of what they had seen. Even as they watched, the failing starlight stole away the details. Only Nona turned from the scene. Only Nona looked behind them to see a grime-covered hand clasp the edge of the road. A moment later, the rest of the person followed, hauling itself up one-handed to stand and return Nona's stare. The figure clasped something glowing to its chest, something spherical, the size of a human head, lit from within by a deep violet light. The glow from it was so deep that it seemed as if it might be the edge of some blaze to challenge the focus moon, if only the eye could follow it off the far end of the rainbow spectrum.
Zol!
It was the Eistreiber. Her habit as stained and tattered as Nona's smock, her face as impassive and unreadable as ever. Beside Nona, Ara turned, then Kettle, and the Abbess.
"You did that?" Nona said. "How?"
The Abbess seemed too stunned for more than one word.
"She has the ship heart,"
Nona said. Kettle shook her head.
"It can't be. Shazal's bolt was too..."
Zol held the spear up, its light somehow both fierce to look upon yet too faint to illuminate the road past glimmers here and there.
"It is the Noi Guin ship heart."
"How could..." Abbess Glass started. Zol bowed her head and raised the spear higher. In the action Nona saw it. Just a glimpse. A stain, dark and purple, flowing from the hand that held the heart down across the wrist, quickly lost beneath the sleeve of Zol's habit. Abbess Glass gathered herself.
"How is this possible?"
Zol raised her face to them, her eyes burning with the ship heart's light.
"I am the chosen one."
Epilogue. Lanotaxis had brought two armies to the Convent of Sweet Mercy. A Pilarthi army that had now been spent, and an army of his own house that had yet to test its strength against the sisters who barred the way. He had hundreds of warriors at his command, but he knew that the eight who stood around him were more dangerous than all the Pilarthi purchased with Taxis wealth and all the soldiers sworn to his name. And of those eight Noi Guin, one was rumored to be more deadly than the other seven together. The singular of the Noi Guin was said only to leave the Tetragode when the Tetragode itself was torn down and reconstructed in some new stronghold, hidden from the world. The singular would move from the old Tetragode to the new and resume his place as the dark heart of the organization. The singular was keeper of the Book of Shadows, linked by Shadow Bond to every Lightless and every Noi Guin, the spider at the center of the web. And yet, here he was, at Lano's right hand, in the light of day and yet so deep in darkness that he seemed a silhouette. Lano signaled to his captain.
"Lead the troops in. Take her down. Crippled would be best, but dead if you must. Kill everyone else, the nuns first, then the children."
He wanted vengeance on Sister Cage, of course he did, but dead was dead. Reaching for more than that had been the downfall of his older brother and his father. Nona Grey had given him his lordship, and he was prepared to miss out on watching her gruesome death if a quick death was safer and more certain. Lano allowed himself a smile of satisfaction as his warriors began to ready their advance. Today, he would watch Sweet Mercy fall.
Clara Gomel stepped amongst the Noiguan as if she were some noble, an equal rather than the turncoat daughter of a failed merchant. Lano resisted the urge to backhand her. Today was a day of victory, not to be tarnished by squabbling with underlings.
"She'll run," Clara said. "Now she has her friend, she'll run. She's terrified of falling into Taxis' hands again."
She glanced around her.
"Or Noiguan hands. She'll make for the caves. You'll never find her. Not unless you know them, like I do."
"My troops will find any that try to run."
Lano had no intention of being goaded into giving chase himself. He regretted not shutting Clara's mouth with his fist the moment she had opened it, uninvited.
"No."
The singular started towards the distant pillars. The Noiguan began to follow in his wake, the girl with them.
"Come."
Lano made no move to go, but a Noiguan to either side took his elbow and started him forward. Lano glanced helplessly at his soldiers. He had never intended to lead this charge. The singular accelerated across the plateau.
"Let her die on a Noiguan blade. Let this be certain. Let there be no escape for her."
"Escape?"
Lano intended to bark his laugh, but it came out nervous.
"She won't run, not from here. It's her home, her family. Besides,"
he gestured to the smoking horizon,
"where would she run? The whole world is on fire."
The end. This is Heather O'Neill. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Grey Sister, Second Book of the Ancestor, by Mark Lawrence. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.